save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast supporting the undefeated Dallas Stars. It's time to do a little stargazing. Mark, this squad is clearly a juggernaut, destined for great things. Am I wrong?
Yes. They got completely outplayed by Detroit, and they had a goalie stand on his head, and apparently they have some snipers, though.
I mean, I love it. 4-2 win, Mark. 4-2 was scoreboard. All right, scoreboard. I'm not these fancy stats.
What did you think about the artificial ads that they had rolling around the rink? Did that interfere with your viewing experience?
You know, people have been complaining about these things for like a year and a half, and I got to be honest, I've never noticed. I'm lucky enough. I cannot recall ever the thing that people seem to complain about is, oh, I can't see the player. I've never had one of those. That I can remember had one of those like clipping experiences where a guy's going behind the net and then all of a sudden he like disappears behind a, you know, Papa John's ad or whatever. I don't know if that's the official sponsor of the NHL. I probably should, but I don't particularly care.
BioSteel is, isn't it? BioSteel. They just declared bankruptcy.
Oh man, that's a good. It's good. Good start to the season. You've got your Bally Networks teetering and your BioCell, man, it's just things are good, man. That cap is going to just skyrocket.
Well, but, you know, and the thing that people don't realize is that once you figure out hockey, you don't really watch for the puck anyway. You kind of know where the puck is based on looking at the players.
Yeah.
And there, without slow motion, I think somebody said there nobody's ever seen the puck go into the net.
I mean, you typically just see like the goalie react with either shame or triumph, right?
Yeah. And maybe look for some red lights and a hand up from the official, and then you get the replay that shows you it bounced off of 3 different guys and somehow found a 5-hole where you didn't think there was a 5-hole and you have a goal. You don't need to watch the puck.
So, I mean, listen, I just, they don't bother me. They just don't. I don't notice them. Maybe if I noticed them more, they would bother me, you know, but I just don't. I'm also the guy, Mark, that thinks that the Fox Track puck was a really good idea and would make the sport a lot more accessible. It was just like 20 years technologically too early for it to be functional, but I think that I've learned that I'm much more open to gimmicks than a lot of other people. because I just, why not, right? Poke around, see if it works, move on to the next thing. I don't tend to hate failure as much.
You don't learn if you don't try, right?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the nice thing here is that we saw actual Dallas Stars jerseys on hockey players who were on ice scoring goals yesterday. And
more goals than the other team, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. W.
Get that up.
And I hate to take the loss here personally, but, you know, David Castillo and I had this kind of ongoing little thing behind the scenes where he said, we have this great team that's showing up. And I said, we have a handful of high-end prospects and then a bunch of who knows what guys who haven't seen the ice at a professional level ever. And I'm eating crow right now. We're 1-0 and we're going into Toronto, and Toronto didn't bring a whole lot, and we could be 2-0 and playing Columbus on Sunday with a chance to go undefeated. Who would have thought?
Oh, man. That we dare to dream, Mark, dare to dream. But you are, we tease a little bit when we talked a lot last week about how this, the win is, I mean, it doesn't not matter, because nothing ever doesn't matter, right? Like, there is stuff to learn. The fact that a goalie stood on its head, the fact that the team was able to counterpunch their way to a win, like, these are not bad things, right? They're valuable learning experiences. It's a sign of, you know, it's a positive sign for the team that they can perhaps get caved in a little bit, but be, you know, professional with their finishing and still get the win. So, like, it's good. There's good that happened, but we also, to your fire back at the start of the podcast, we also don't want to look at the scoreline and blind ourselves to everything else that's going on. So this, to your point, the roster's and based on Traverse City's past, right, there are some names on this roster, right? Sankoven, Maverick Bork, Leon Bichelle. Like, there are some guys here. We'll start with first impressions, right? It can be players, it can be the whole teams. But walk me through how you feel about the game in general.
I mean, in general, it was really a contrast of styles. And Detroit brought a pretty veteran prospect group, if you will. And they got the puck in the zone, and they cycled, and they put a lot of pressure on the Stars' defense, which really doesn't have a whole lot of experience at the professional level. But, boy, if they made a mistake and the Stars got the puck, the Stars were moving up ice. They were moving up in tandem. They were passing the puck. And they had several guys who just made some real great finishes off the rush. And so it's kind of like, you know, the Stars got caved, but they were dangerous on that counterattack. And that's, I think, the best that you can hope out of this group of players. But that's kind of the style that we're developing as an organization. And so if we can get guys who can move the puck and then guys who can finish while we're moving the puck, they'll fit in, and it's fun hockey to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it also, it to your point, it speaks to the roster, right? Looking at some of the names that got invited. I think the larger point about the style of play is interesting to me, because we've spent a lot of time kind of harping on, you know, some of the defenders at the Stars level, right? Some of the guys that highlighting the weakness of some of the guys that can't move the puck. And it's interesting to see the prospect, which in theory is playing like the version that the team would like to eventually see grow into the big squad, right? It's interesting to them playing that something that kind of relies on those breakouts and relies on more aggression.
Yeah, and I mean, on the defensive end, there's certainly interesting stuff to watch. I mean, number one, obviously, you're watching how Leon Bichelle is acclimating to the North American game. He's big. He's physical. There was a point in the game where he kind of goaded a Red Wings player into taking a penalty. You know, it's Traverse City. It's Michigan. This is the one game that you can depend that you play in Traverse City, where the rink is packed and they're all wearing red, and they're very supportive of Detroit, and they were riding Bichelle. You know, every time he touched the puck, he was getting boos, and I think he kind of thrives on that. So,
I mean, looking at how he profiles to, you know, at the NHL level, his size, the type of defenseman he's going to be, you know, you don't want to read tea leaves after one game, but that was encouraging to me as well, because that's, you know, that's kind of the guy he's going to be, is the player on the Stars that everybody else hates because he just kicks your teeth in every night, right? Versus one of those silky puck rush types. So I think it's an interesting, hopefully, sneak peek into the future to watch him be nasty, right? And get the reaction that he got.
Yeah, and that's kind of the game that you'd expect. What I didn't expect out of Bixel was he likes having the puck on his stick.
Yeah.
And he can skate real well. He showed some great skate work on some retrievals where he just left a forechecker in the dust and he headed back up ice. And it was kind of it wasn't really good for Christian Kyrou, who was his partner, because that's kind of what the role that Kyrou wanted. And Kyrou ended up watching a lot of Bixel as opposed to doing what he does well.
And what would you say Kyrou's real skill set is?
Moving the puck and especially moving it in the offensive end.
Mm.
And Bixel was such a focus of that pair that I'm kind of hoping they break him up here in the second game and allow Bixel to kind of be the dominant guy, and that'll free up Kyrou to play with somebody where he can take on that puck moving and offensive defender role. We need to see that out of him.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, Mark, and I know that you've got a you know, it's one game, which is all the data that you need, right? With your yeah. practiced eye, but what you're talking about with Bichel, I think, would certainly fall very much into the found money category with the Dallas Stars if he could demonstrate, you know, he is being looked at, not in a bad, this isn't a negative, right? But he's being looked at in a very particular way as an NHL player. What of the things that you observed offensively do you think, again, based on a comprehensive single prospect tournament game on crappy ice, right? What of those things do you think might translate to the NHL level?
I mean, I think just having that size and being comfortable using the size is what I would expect. And everything else is just pure bonus. He was quarterbacking the second power play unit. I mean, I think the Stars have some high hopes for him. And I think the big challenge at this point is there were some points where he was trying to skate the puck up. And he let guys get a little closer than maybe he thought they should be able to get at the puck. And so he got jacked a couple times.
Yeah.
And so he has some things to learn about the small ice and how much space he actually has on that ice. And, you know, we'll see. Game two, I think we'll see if he took some lessons to heart. But the interesting thing, I think, about Bixel is that he probably is slotted in as a right D, just based on the way the team's configured. That's where he's going to get his ice time. And, you know, if we're talking about the Texas Stars instead of the Dallas Stars this coming year, it would be so much fun to watch Bixel paired with Jared Rosberg, who also is the kind of guy who can get under the other team's skin and get fans booing at him. And wouldn't that be a fun pairing to watch in Cedar Park?
A dare to dream, man. How and what should let's give it a 1 to 10 and then talk about some of the other guys, because I think there's a lot going on. A scale of 1 to 10, right? Where would you know, one being, let's call it one being the you know, Fabian Brunstrom, and 10 being, you know, Eddie Belfour beats Patrick Waugh back to back. Where is your excitement level on Bichel right now?
I'd say it's a 9. I mean, this was a first game, and he came out and he hadn't played since May, by the way.
Yeah. He since breaking his ankle. So this is literally his first game in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, he was ready to go. He took the initiative. He played a physical game. He moved the puck. He skated well. There's a lot of upside there, and so I'm starting at a baseline that says, okay, let's see what this guy has. And I'm saying, yeah, maybe the hype is right.
I'm gonna ask you one more question, and this is stupid prognostication, and I promise this isn't going to turn into a Jamie Benn scores fewer goals than the defense, rub it in your face the entire season. I know that I'm asking a dumb question. Where would you put the odds that we see Bichel in the NHL this season?
About 1%. Yeah, I mean, just the way the team's set up, they brought in guys who I think they figure can contribute at the NHL level and are playing in the A. And so, yeah, Bayreuther is going to get his shot first. Rosberg probably gets a shot first. You know, if they lose the right kind of big guy, Petrovic probably gets a shot. But it depends on development. So, you know, he's got a lot to learn, and I think he's showing that that he has a skill set to be pretty dominant.
I love it. Looking at some of the other names, staying on the defense, anything to say on the likes of Grishnikov, Kyrou, anybody else stand out on the blue line?
In a positive way, probably not. I mean, I was actually surprised a little bit by Jacob Murray, but you know, that's like you know, a zero on the impact scale right there. He made a nice play to feed Semenov for the second goal. You know, other than that, these guys are out there fighting for just a shot to play on the third pair in Cedar Park. So other than Kyrou and Bixel, the only other guy out there is Grishnikov. And Grishnikov looked okay, but he didn't really stand out for anything. He's got some work to do, and we'll see how that progresses once we get to the AHL season.
Love it. And we're going to progress to the forwards here in a minute, Mark. We are going to take a step away very quickly for a little bit of advertisements. We gotta pay those bills, but we'll be right back. All right. So I think my view of the defense is generally yours, right? The marquee guy is Bichel, and that's who we're all watching, and that's who we should all be watching. I think that's where it gets made. I think it's a little bit more complicated when we move to the forward group, because they're quite a few names, actually. The obvious ones we've been talking about the entire time, you know, Bork and Stankoven are both vying to be this year's, you know, Wyatt Johnston. But as well, you know, guys like Blumel, Oscar Bach, Antonio Strangis is always a delight when he gets in the mix. So we'll dive in on some of the individuals, Mark, but just as a starting point, what were your impressions of that forward group?
I think Stankoven looked really calm and solid. He's not afraid of the physical contact, which is what you worry about it with a guy of his stature. He's good at distributing the puck. He's got a great shot. He's going to be tremendous this year. Bork, I thought, was maybe a little shaky, and maybe that had to do with where he was set up in the lineup. He was playing with Strangis and Blumel. And they were part of the team, same Texas Stars team last year, but they really didn't spend a lot of time together. And I'm not sure that they mesh as a group. But you know, Bork will be fine. Bork got better as the season went on.
And let me ask you this, because this is just a start. This is something I developed. I very much agree with you about Maverick. I'm gonna call him Maverick for a minute, but wanting to talk about something I've observed, and he definitely feels like a fit guy. And what I mean by that is there's some players you can put with any other two randos and you're going to get the same style, right? Just certain types of things translate in different ways. And in my limited, admittedly, viewing experience of Maverick Bork, he seems like one of those guys that when he needs that. Because I think a lot of his game is based on, you know, puck movement and creativity, he kind of needs his line mates to be on his wavelength more than some other players do. And so he tends to need to have more comfort with his wings to really get, you know, maximum Maverick than potentially some other guys. And that's not necessarily a downside, because once he gets that comfort, you can kind of see how it all comes together. And he finished the season in the AHL, you know, playing very well, right? But he feels like a guy that it almost, it's one of those things, like long-term, it feels good, because once he gets into a prominent spot, he'll be able to, you know, kind of dictate that better. But in the short term, it almost feels like, if we're talking about who's going to make the squad and who's going to be the first call-up, it almost feels like something that might limit him, because he doesn't always look to me like a guy that you can, you know, reach out to on a Tuesday and say, hey, we need you Wednesday night, right? He feels like he needs more runway than that. Is that just wrong?
I think at the NHL level, especially if he's playing in the in a top nine, maybe even a top six role, he has no problem because people will kind of do what he expects them to do, and so he's going to be putting the puck where a good hockey player should be, and with the right guys, that should be will be a will be. His skill set sometimes though drops in. You remember a couple of years ago when Alexander Radulov was falling off, and so he got down onto the bottom line, and Radulov would go down underneath the goal and somehow pop the puck into open ice right in front of the net, and you wouldn't see any green there at all.
Yeah,
and it almost seems like that where it's like, okay, you're putting in all the work and you just don't have the supporting cast to do what they need to do off of what your work is accomplishing. Gronjus and Blumel probably aren't the right guys with him, but that's what this team has right now. We'll see how that works. I'm not worried about Bork. Bork's going to be either a number one or a number two center in Cedar Park, and I think the Stars organization knows that he'll be ready when and if he's called on.
Yeah, and I think he's also a guy that, and we'll talk, you know, we talked last week about sort of the differences between Traverse City and training camp. I think Bork is a guy that Traverse City is about getting some reps in and almost about using Bork as a mile marker to judge the players around him. Like, Bork isn't in Traverse City to prove anything about himself, right? That if he's ready or not, that's going to be training camp, I think. That's my opinion. So you put Bork on the Traverse City roster in part because you want him to get some playing time, in part because you have to put somebody there, right? And then I think you also put him there because if you're going to evaluate the likes of Strandjes and some of the other players on that roster, Bork is a really good, like, he's a known quantity, he's close, so you can kind of almost use him as that measuring stick and say, oh, if whoever looks good next to Maverick Bork, then that's much easier to track to how they might look at the AHL level or the NHL level even because of that. So I'm not, like, my comment wasn't necessarily to rip on the kid, but I do think you're right. It's his big moment is going to be the training camp that he has and where that establishes him in the organization.
Yeah, and let me just correct one thing. He wasn't playing with Blumel. He was playing with Kyle McDonald, so even more of kind of a misfit there on the second line. And I think maybe we need to look at the whole game a bit with an understanding of what happened to Oscar Bach, who took kind of a borderline hit. He was certainly set up as he was coming down the crease, and he was helped off the ice and didn't return. So, you know, Oscar Bach was wearing the C for the Dallas Stars, and I think he's probably one of those guys who you would expect to be on the short list for call ups to Dallas. So, you know, depending on what actually happened with the injury there, that's a big story. That's obviously the leader that the team was bringing here with a pretty young group of prospects.
Certainly a keeper on that. I have not seen, as of, you know, recording this Friday morning, I haven't seen anything solid on what his situation is.
Yeah, I haven't either. You know, we'll obviously, if he's missing the second game, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in the lineup against Toronto, we'll get to see somebody new in that role. And you know, things get rotated through anyways. Hopefully this is not a long-term thing. So just a little shake-up. Proceed with caution.
Fair enough. Now, what about just on that same sticking with prospects, moving to the other end of the size spectrum from Bichel, how was Logan Stankoven?
I mean, I don't know that he really stood out as just an obvious superior prospect than anybody else. He was calm under pressure. He wasn't afraid to go to the body. There was one point where I think he kind of took Elmer Soderblom into the boards, and if you don't know, Soderblom's about a 6'8" giant who's probably the best non-goaltender in the game. He plays with an edge. He's not afraid to go into the crease. didn't really get on the score sheet until the empty net goal at the end that Blumel scored. But his defensive work and his ability to get the puck up to Blumel was very skilled. So you're kind of seeing what you expect. Stankoven played last year and he was kind of the same way. He did get on the score sheet a bit more, but he creates opportunities, and at least at the prospect tournament level, it just hasn't shown up in the goals all that much.
So I have a question that's been something that all of the coverage about Stankoven is talking about how, despite his size, he's a bulldog. Despite his size, he doesn't shy away from physicality. You know, he's doing that. My question is, should he be? And I don't mean like, I just mean, do you think that a player that's going to be, you know, 5'7" at the NHL level, should he be looking at his game less as a, what can I do that the bigger players do? And more of a, it's, you know, there's a wear and tear concern, right? Should he be looking more at how to not rely as much on that tenacity? I'm explaining it poorly, but I'm trying to wrap my head around is, what is he, how is there a difference between how he plays now and how he has to play in the NHL?
I mean, I think it's the difference between being proactive and reactive. And I think as a smaller player, you're much more likely to face injury impacts if you're being reactive. And so by maintaining the initiative on a lot of this stuff, I think Stankoven can choose where the physicality comes from. And in that sense, I think it shows that he's not afraid of dealing with the big players on the other team. And so it just kind of takes it off the table. Yeah, he's smaller, but he's a grinder. He's not afraid to go into the corners. He's not afraid to go into the crease. So people don't pick on it. You know? And that's kind of been the strangest component that goes the other way. Strangis also has some size issues, and he tends to get victimized for his size, and that's held him back quite a bit. And you know, he has offensive abilities, but the size thing kills him. And Stankoven just takes that off the table.
Well, that's good. He quiet first game, but nothing. Any glaring warning signs? Anything that stands out on the O side of things for him?
No. He's top line center. Put him with talented guys, the points will come. His defense was solid. He was getting back on plays. I have absolutely no worries. I think that it might be a little premature to say NHL ready, but you know, hey, let's see how October and November go in Cedar Park, and that could change. You know, it took Bork a couple months before he got comfortable. I think Stankoven's adjustment into professional hockey will probably go a little easier.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the other guy as well. Like, we're really going to, I think Traverse City probably matters a little bit more to him than it does to Maverick Bork. And unfortunately, it's the size thing. But I also think, generally speaking, it's going to be the training camp. That's where he is either going to make, that's where it's going to decide kind of where he fits on the roster. He's not going to do anything in Traverse City that puts him into the NHL or that doesn't put him into the NHL, I don't think.
Right. And I mean, that's the same thing that happened with Wyatt Johnston last year. You know, Johnston was probably less noticeable at Traverse City last year than Stankoven was, to tell you the truth. But he showed that he could make proper decisions, and then he got into training camp and they just couldn't make him go away.
That's such a good way to describe like the early Wyatt Johnston experience. It's like they could not make him go away. There was they just couldn't find a way to justify him not being there.
Yep. And he made that team a better team. You know, you could argue that he was the one who brought on the Renaissance. So you know, there's a whole lot that goes with a rookie like that made that Dallas Stars team a better team than it probably would have been if he wasn't on it.
Yep. I mean, we talked about the Renaissance. He was part of that. How about so those are the two marquees. Anybody else? You know, Blumel's had a cup of coffee at the NHL level. He was on the roster. Strangis, he's got that weird skating, but you know, kind of finally reached the AHL level. Anybody else that you think is worth paying attention to in the latter stages of Travers and early stages of training camp?
I mean, I think you probably need to look at Matthew Semenoff, who has been playing with Stankoven for several years. He's taken advantage of that, and he has a pretty good shot. For a seventh rounder, he's looking really, really good. It'd be interesting to see how he performs away from Stankoven. You don't know how much of this is just coattails and their ability to read off of each other. But he's come a long way. I was kind of expecting to see a little more from Francesco Arcuri. And game one was a mixed bag. And maybe that's just me kind of holding it against him for putting the puck into the skates that caused the Bach injury. But yeah. Anyway, those are kind of the other two guys that I'm watching. We had a very inexperienced fourth line that seemed to hold together pretty good. The only other narrative that I'm really paying attention to is Remy Poirier in net, and we kind of are burying the lead here. Poirier was great in this game, especially you consider that it's the first competitive action in quite some time, and goalies kind of are expected to not do all that much here at Traverse City. And I think Poirier is making an argument with his play in the AHL last year, certainly his excellent play in Idaho last year, that he's a solid number two, maybe even a 1A, 1B situation in Cedar Park with Matt Murray. And that, organizationally.
My goodness, yeah. That would be such a win for the Dallas Stars. And that's not throwing shade on the current backup situation, but there's the defense is an issue as well, but an organizational issue has been after Wedgwood and Ottinger, then what? And if they could get a firmer answer to that question, my goodness, that would help.
Well, the interesting thing to me is at the AHL level, you almost every team has this veteran presence who's kind of the first call up. Who's kind of a mediocre NHL goalie, but you kind of bring him up because you trust him. And so far, Dallas hasn't really signed anybody that is going to fill that role. It's Ottinger, it's Wedgwood, and then you go down and you take a look, and Murray was a rookie last year in the AHL, and Poirier, I believe, didn't have enough games last year, so he'll be a rookie this year. You're talking about a goalie tandem for a team that's lost a lot on defense with running out guys without a whole lot of experience. That's going to play out. That's going to play out in odd and surprising ways.
It's I like it. That competition is a good thing. And this is, Ottinger is Ottinger. We're not talking about Jake Ottinger, to be very clear. But, I think your best case is the guys that you have play well. But looking at what Wedgwood makes and the term of his contract and all of that, there's a spot in the NHL if there's a standout, right? Like it isn't a situation where Dallas has two ironclad locked in goalies at the NHL level and there's no real room to move. There is, I think, an open question of who in the middle and long term will be Jake Ottinger's understudy. And I think as well, even in the short term, there's a if Remy or someone else can make a performance-based case that they should be the other guy, then there's flexibility in the organization to do that, which will only make the AHL team better. I think it might help the as we go through a little bit of a transition phase defensively. Having reliable net minding might help that unit stabilize itself after some talent shuffling. Losing Harley to the NHL, losing a couple of other guys to other organizations. So it's an exciting thing to see that position firming up.
Yeah, and Poirier is such a great, great guy too. I mean, take a look. If you never saw his hockey fight last year, go to YouTube and track it down. He's got a lot of personality, and goaltenders tend to be a little offbeat, and Poirier just has those little personality traits that make you want to root for him.
He's got the goaltending weirdness.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like this, you know, from Quebec, he's got this little French buccaneer thing going, you know, little pointy beard and a nice stash and the long hair that he can flip. So good dude.
I love it. I love it. We'll wrap up with Travis Saban and talk a little training camp. Mark, before we move on, any other big picture views, small picture details, anything else that you want to highlight from game one of the tournament?
Not particularly. I mean, it's a prospect tournament. We won. Great. Some guys look good. We need to figure out how to deal with a heavy cycle team. Fine. These guys probably aren't the ones who are going to be doing that within the organization. So let's watch game two, see if anything else emerges.
Yeah, well, game two's coming up. They've got Toronto, who lost. I think they got a 7 spot dropped on them by the Blue Jackets.
7-3. Columbus is going to be fun on Sunday. If you're going to watch one game, watch the Columbus game. They brought a lot of really good guys, you know, high-end prospects, and they obviously know how to score. So, yeah, Sunday will be a good game.
Perfect. And then, of course, right around the corner after Traverse City is training camp. Mark, you know, what are your kind of main storylines heading into training camp?
You know, I don't have a whole lot with training camp. There's kind of the what do we do with Ty DeLandria question, but and maybe some where does Mason Marchment fall in the lineup?
That's me, man. That's my big. That's I can't. There's a couple players I'm interested in, but Mason is the one that with. The weirdness of his last season, everything that went on, all of the noise, the acquisitions that the Stars made, I am just fascinated to figure out where I want to see him on a line rush just to start getting comfortable with, like, what does the coaching staff think they have in him at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you kind of say, do we get that one good year Florida Mason Marchment and how do we draw that out versus do we get what every other season has been? And you know, the big question, if we get that guy who had that one great year in Florida, that could be just the thing that throws this team over the top.
Well, even if you get the guy that was fantastic to start last season for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
It's not that his success is entirely confined to that. I think it'd be an easier conversation if it was just that one season, but he started out looking every bit like the guy that they wanted when they signed him.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing is, like, rumor has it that Miro's been working on his shot. So I'm just going to keep that in mind this whole season.
I think that there's a thing that happens sometimes in youth sports, right? And it's when you have there's this transition phase when you've got a kid that's extremely physically gifted that it's almost like they it's not that they hold back, but it's that they don't try certain things as they like you have a really talented U14 that moves up a level, right? They all initially, some of them just take to it, but others don't try everything in their toolbox immediately because they go into the next level thinking, okay, I have to figure out if I can hang here. I don't want to make any mistakes. I'm not going to try this thing because surely it's not going to work at this level and it did at the last level. And with the really good ones, a lot of times they almost, I always jokingly call it, like, they figure out how good they are and they have all of a sudden it kind of clicks with them. Like, oh no, wait, I am so very good that all of the stuff that worked at the lower level still works now and I should keep trying it. And I wonder if we had a version of that with Miro last season. Part of this was coaching driven and usage driven, and he got more of an offensive role. But I wonder if part of it is he's talked about how the pride he takes in being, you know, excellent defensively. And I almost wonder if he was so focused on being this all world defensive player that he didn't, relative to Miro's excellence, right, didn't necessarily give his offensive game the same level of attention until last season, and you know, maybe had that, you know, things click into that Kaiser Soze moment where it's like, oh wait, I can be just as good defensively and also score a ton of points. Maybe I'll just do that.
Well, and there may be a little pride involved there just because he had such a great season last year and nobody gave him credit for it.
Yeah.
And maybe Miro took that poorly.
It's the Michael Jordan.
And he said, I'm as good as all these guys who are getting hype for awards, and I'm not in the conversation all that much.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to. I'm already better than they are on defense, but they aren't. But they aren't going to give me credit for that. So now, yeah, I'll just up this skill, which I'm going to get credit for, and then I'm one of the top three, if not the best defender in the NHL. Period. He's got pride.
Oh man, that's the kind of
rumor. It's good for us.
It's so good. I was gonna say that's the kind of rumor as a fan that just makes your heart start to go pitter patter, because if he gets better than he was last season, because I love that. I think that's great. That's wonderful news. Yeah, we talked about Miro. I think as well, just on the terms of defense, Mark, you can't learn a whole bunch from training camp even, but the defense is kind of a jumble right now. And I think for better or worse, it's settled in terms of who's going to play. But I do think that I'm very interested to see how everybody gets used and what the combinations are going to be, who's going to get looks on special teams, those. And we'll start to see in training camp and then in the preseason, we'll start to see signs of what the coaches think their pairings are. So I'm very interested to see that when the, you know, do they split up Lindell and Hakanpaa? Can they get Thomas Harley onto a power play? You know, all of the things. Can Miro get onto his strong side? Do they even care to try? Right, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, you're saying all the right stuff. It sounds like you're doing a little promo for our upcoming Flowers and Unicorns podcast, where we talk about everything going right for the Dallas Stars.
It's one of my favorites. Yes, it's when we'll be sitting down to talk through all of the various situations and taking exclusively a bright side upside view of everything that might happen. Yeah, Flowers and Unicorns. So that is coming. And then obviously, Mark, to watch the taste
doom of, doom afterwards. Doom Everybody cast. Loves the doom cast, but we so have to good. Wait for that one. You have to get through the Flowers and Unicorns before the doom.
Yeah. Well, because you want to start the season on a low note, so that you don't get too excited when they're good early or too down if they're bad early.
I'm with you. I'm already I'm already putting on my rose colored glasses.
I'm just so glad we have hockey again.
Oh, isn't that true?
Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to get to before we call it a morning?
No, rose-colored glasses are going on. It takes a lot for me to get ready for the Flowers and Unicorns cast, so we gotta start early.
There's a lot of inertia in Dallas Stars fandom that prevents us from just getting excited about something.
But it's coming, and we're gonna do it anyways.
It's rumbling down the tracks. We'll do that. We'll probably do that next week, is my thinking. Yep. We got to get the schedule right. But I imagine the next cast will be Flowers and Unicorns, and then we'll doom it up big time before the season starts.
We should probably try and get David on for the Flowers and Unicorns cast, because he fits into that one so well.
Nothing. People don't love anything more than adding hardcore numbers conversations to a Flowers and Unicorns podcast, right? For sure.
Well, that sounds good. Let's watch some hockey.
Do it. Thanks, Mark. As always, KT, thank you as well. Listeners, thank you for following us on the site change and all of that. And please keep downloading, liking on all of the socials. Reach out, right? We're always looking for topics, always looking for stuff to talk about, and just thrilled as anything that the season is finally going to get started. So have a great day. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at weeks 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.